You're tuned into Madiba's Radio, broadcasting live from Nelson Mandela University.
I have fought against white domination. And I have fought against death domination. I have studied the idea of a democratic and free society, in which all persons live together in harmony and with equal opportunity. It is an idea which I hope to live for and to achieve. But if needs be, it is an idea for which
I am prepared to die. Nelson Mandela University. Change the world. You're tuned into Madiba's Radio. Changing the world, one voice at a time.
Welcome to another episode of Extra Time right here on Madiba's podcast. My name is Samgele Kale. It is your favorite episode of the Madiba's podcast, of course, where we talk everything sports related, everything that has been happening, and it's they're still going to be happening right here on campus in South Africa and outside of South Africa. I'm not alone today, but I'm with Lolonga. Hi, Lolonga.
Hi, Sam.
How are you?
I'm good, and you?
I'm good, 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 good. Ribona always says that the sport world never sleeps. It's always buzzing, and we are right here to give you all of that, right?
Right.
So we have the university sports updates that have been happening right here in Nelson Mandela University. The FIFA World Cup, very excited to talk about that, as well as the show is going to be happening. Basketball, also linking it maybe with our own basketball, very excited for that. Rugby, Formula One, and also remember that this month we are raising Cancer Awareness and Pride Month this month as we celebrate courage, resilience, and diversity in sport. And that is what we are on for this episode.
Starting with the basketball, tomorrow the much anticipated finale of Friday Night Lights takes place at the Indoor Sports Center. The fixtures to look forward to, it's firstly the NBK versus the B team, the Madiba's ladies team versus the men's C team, and the last time they had an encounter, the ladies won by just one goal, and also the Gemineers versus A team is going to lock horns. So the games, they start at 5 o'clock, and as usual, it's 10 rand if you're an NMU student for the ticket and 15 rand if you're a non-student.
And always a nice time being there. I always say this. I enjoy being there. Like, I enjoy attending the... Have you been to one of them?
I haven't been.
Maybe you should attend this very last one. It's always a buzz. Remember that this is proudly brought to you by Madiba's Basketball. And Friday Night Lights happens this coming Friday. Game starts at 5 p.m. Tickets are sold at the gate. And they also do have a cash bar that is open, a food court that is also open for everyone. Cannot wait to attend this. We've got also the SCORE Madiba's Campus Sports League. Yay, it's been a long time coming.
And I can tell you're very excited.
I'm very excited because it's been a long year, actually, yeah, of Campus League. And it's very exciting to see now everything that we've been working towards now actually coming to an end.
It's culminating into that one moment.
Yeah, like I'm very excited. We've worked so hard with the team, you know, putting it together and now putting the finals together, the teams that have been playing, congratulations to everyone who's going to be playing their playoffs, and congratulations to everyone who's going to be playing their finals. They've worked really hard as well. It's been a year. For those that don't know, Campus Sports League, SCORE Madiba's Campus Sports League, rather, is a league that is happening at North Campus Field and South Campus Field. It's been going on for the whole year actually started right after Campus Life, and then now it's the final. So the different sport codes, which is football, rugby, basketball, netball, futsal and chess, have been playing for every week, every Sunday, and they're now going to be playing their finals this coming Saturday, with all the sports codes that I've mentioned. The venues and the schedules that are mentioned is the Madiba's Indoor Sports Center and the Futsal Courts, Madiba Stadium and the Madiba's Chancellor's Room. But before that, ne?
Yes.
Before all that yes. starts, before all that starts, there is a fun run that is okay. happening. Athletics is hosting a fun run at 8 a.m. Okay. just before the games start at right about 9 a.m. So there's a fun run. Registration is absolutely free.
What I like is that there's always something to look forward to, like just every week.
Yeah, there's definitely that to look forward to this coming weekend. Do not forget to check them out on their social media pages. It is Madiba's Campus Sports League and Madiba's Athletics to do sign up for the run as well. Entry is free. I forgot to mention this. Absolutely free. No 10 rand, no 50 rand or whatsoever.
Moving on to the ladies, Madiba's ladies rugby. A huge congratulations to Shomla Puzi for her achievements at the Women's Club Championships with Kwaru Rugby Club. She was also selected for the Dream Team, an honor reserved for top performers across the tournament. Siti Halala Kushomla. And moving on to the FIFA World Cup. Yo.
Before that, I was very excited when I saw Shomla actually that she won that big achievement in the Women's Club Championship. I mean, I know her consistency. Okay. She's even been to Springboks Women, and she's a great player to add to that. So I think really an honor has to be reserved where it's due, and honor has to be given, and you know, credit has to be given to where they're due. Yeah. So congratulations to Shomla for that achievement. Right here. She represents Madiba's ladies rugby. She plays for the ladies team as well right here at school.
And also what I like is that women's rugby, it's actually evolving this year. Ever since the Women's Rugby World Cup, that historic quarterfinal placement, it's just moving in the right direction. It is. Only upwards from here.
It really has been. And the Madiba's ladies rugby have also been doing quite well. Have also been really doing quite well. Now moving on to the FIFA World Cup. Yay. I tell you that apparently the last time Bafana qualified for the World Cup was before I was born. It was literally before I was born.
Same.
So, hey, I couldn't believe it because not that I'd totally forgotten about the games, but I was just held up somewhere. So I wasn't really watching the game, but I was instantly when I remember that they're playing because I knew that Nigeria was also playing.
Yeah.
And I knew that we needed Nigeria to win.
A favor.
So I first checked the score.
Yeah.
Our score. It was still 2-0. I was like, what is happening? I was like, oh my goodness, this is so exciting. Then I remembered that Nigeria has to win as well. Like, okay, let me check the Nigeria game. I'm like, what? Nigeria is also winning. I was like, yay. This is what I came here for.
It was honestly truly remarkable. And after that game, I just started researching flights. No.
Yeah. Yeah,
I have a passport already. I just need a visa at this point.
We are all good. And the money to travel.
Okay, the money. The most important.
That is what we are going for. We are going to America for that FIFA World Cup. I see a lot of X, people are now posting one of the play. I don't know if it's AI. One of them is chasing after Mbappe. Mbappe playing for France, of course, running after Mbappe. Now everyone's like, guys are taking too far. You guys are now taking it too far. So yes, what do you mean? But we shall see. Out of the 48 sports, only 28 teams have taken the sport, which includes Bafana, and Cape Verde. And the real reason I'm highlighting these two teams is because Cape, it's their first time qualifying for the FIFA World Cup.
Yeah.
And Bafana has hosted the FIFA World Cup in 2010, and that the only time the nation had appeared in the knockout stages. Actually, they only went as far as the group stage. So what makes it nice, that despite the challenges during the African qualifying campaign, when they penalized a 3-point deduction. I think that's what even more exciting, that despite the 3 points deduction, because we really stood a chance of not qualifying because of that deduction.
And Benin were looking like they're going to take our spot. It looked scary for a moment.
Yeah, it really did. So, you know, having suffered to deduct points from us, and we still actually emerged after that. So we got penalized because we fielded Teboho Mokoena, whereas he was suspended. Okay. And I've had this conversation with a lot of people. This was also in a match with Lesotho. So I've had this conversation with quite a lot of people that we're not supposed to be penalized. Maybe we were, but I mean, what you as SAFA, how did we get to even have Uteboho playing? Because we do send out the team list before the game even starts. So you were supposed to pick up that Uteboho Mokoena is suspended and is not supposed to be playing.
So it was someone in the technical team, the team manager.
Basically. Yes, we are to blame for fielding someone who is not supposed to be playing, right? But they are also to blame. They shouldn't be just... They shouldn't have just deducted points for us only.
And also, what do you say, for example, there was a situation, right? If they wouldn't have picked it up, but the player knew that they were suspended, then how would you think it would have worked in that regard?
But Bafana Bafana knew that they were... So they were also unethical in their ways, right?
Yeah.
Because they most definitely knew that Teboho was not supposed to be playing. But they still put him in the... whatever, because he's a good player, of course, right? But that's expected. That's what I said, that you would have expected them to do that. Yeah. So now it's your duty as SAFA to look out for Uguti Bafana Bafana does not actually do what you're expecting them to do. Bafana Bafana is wrong. We're not going to
dispute that.
We're not going to just... They were wrong. I'm not really vouching for them. They're my team, of course. But I'm not really vouching for their unethical behaviors, you know, of fielding a player that's not supposed to be there. But SAFA must also suffer the consequences.
And also, when you think of the FIFA World Cup, who would you like to face in the group stages?
Yeah. At this point, Aish.
The streets are buzzing, and currently people are saying, we want Argentina, we want France, we want them all, we want Mbappe, we want Holland, we want everyone.
We want everyone because we are ready. We are ready. So remember that Bafana Bafana was able to finish top of their Group C, after a 3-0 win against Rwanda. This thus creating an automatic qualification. Hey, it's like a dream come true.
So there's still a chance for Nigeria to make it.
I don't know, actually.
Because apparently, if you're number two, then you go. There's some sort of playoffs that are going to take place.
I'm not sure. Maybe there is. I don't know, though.
But they really helped us. I don't want to lie. Credit to them.
Definitely. Now moving on to basketball.
The 2025-2026 NBA season officially kicks off on the 21st of October. It is the upcoming 80th season for the National Basketball Association. You know, like, one thing that I actually learned a lot in this moment already about basketball. It just made me so interested more to learn more about the sports.
More reasons for you to go to Friday Night Lights then.
You see... And also, the women's team finished their season this past weekend with the Las Vegas Aces winning the 2025 WNBA Champions. Aisha Wilson was outstanding. She didn't only win league MVP, but also the finals MVP, averaging 28.5 points and 11.8 rebounds in the finals.
Now, the Rugby URC is still continuing with the upcoming fixtures for this weekend. The Lions will be facing Scarlet. Sharks will be facing Ulster. Leinster versus Munster. Zebre Palmer versus Stormers. Ospreys versus Glasgow Warriors. Now, the Sharks will be boosted by the Springbok. Scrum half Grant Williams making his first URC start of the season. Williams' return is significant and he leads the Tech after a challenging tour. Ulster presents a tough challenge with their robust forward pack and strategic gameplay. So home advantage and returning players will be crucial for the Sharks to secure a win. We need it.
I want to ask you something, Sam, as a Sharks fan. Where do you think it's going wrong for you guys?
I have no idea.
For example, right, you've got the players like stacked with Springboks, right?
No, but
would you say it's the coach or it's some way?
I think because the other team that we're playing was under 21s or under 20s, if I'm not mistaken. So I think that was the main cause of the losses. They were trying to get the team, you know, to the young ones to say, Uguti, they must get used to playing. But now that this is playing, now this is their first team playing. Mm-hmm. So definitely the first team, you can expect wins after
fireworks.
Wins. Yeah. But with the under-20s or under-21s, I'm not sure what was the problem. Whether maybe it's because they were not used to playing, but I don't think they're not used to playing, but maybe playing professionally. But I don't think it's a coach problem. It's just a matter of them being, you know, mentally ready and physically ready for them to play.
And also, would you say it's a good opportunity for the Springboks? Because in some of the games, like, for example, you see the Stormers, right? Like, some of the Springboks, they returned. But then, you know, you can tell when players are getting tired because they came off of a championship and now they're still preparing for November. So would you say it's good that the Springboks are playing now in the October, or should they take a rest?
They could, but I mean, do they have anything coming up? I doubt. Mm. So it's more like
preparation for November.
It's more like a win for the teams, like Sharks, having a player from Springboks. But rest is very crucial and is very much needed. Yeah. So maybe they need to rest. But I don't know their capacity of playing and their capacity of exhaustion, you know, or of enduring exhaustion or fatigue for that matter. But I think because they go to, you know, these doctors and whatnot, they are advised correctly on how they should do it. And I don't think they could be or should be playing if they're not fit to do so. So, yeah, I think maybe it is a good advantage for the teams. Now, remember that October, we are celebrating Cancer Awareness. Let's observe this Cancer Awareness Month, a time to honor those affected by cancer, including athletes who has faced the disease with the remarkable courage. Here are the notable South African sports figures who have battled cancer.
Okay, so the first one is Omphile Motaung, a pioneering South African ultra-endurance mountain biker and cancer awareness advocate. At just 25 years old, she became the youngest and first black woman to complete the grueling Race Across South Africa Freedom Challenge, a 2,150-kilometer self-navigated race from Pietermaritzburg to Paul in 21 days. I can't imagine like the preparation that goes into preparing for that type of race.
Yeah, no, that's quite long.
And also beyond Rasa, Omphile has participated in other challenging races where she secured victories in every stage of the amateur category alongside her ex-Zorro MTB Academy partner. Her advocacy work includes partnerships with organizations such as Iron Oncology, where she shares her personal story of cancer to emphasize the importance of early cancer detection and prevention. Her story is a testament to resilience, determination, and the power of sport to inspire change.
Now, we also do have another one, which I will get to speak to right after Lolonga takes us to Formula One, as we will be wrapping up the show.
Okay, so with Formula One, the United States Grand Prix in Austin is the next race on the calendar, scheduled for October 17 to 19th this year. This event is particularly notable as McLaren has already secured the 2025 Constructors' Championship and Oscar Pistorius leads the drivers' standings. However, Max Verstappen remains a formidable contender, having closed the gap to Piastri by 41 points over the last three races. With the standing, we can see that Lewis Hamilton isn't even in the top five, but he's a seven-time Formula One world champion and has faced tough seasons despite his record-breaking career.
Now, before we wrap up the show, as you remember that Cancer Awareness Month is October, and closing off the show, we have Kelly Wilson, who is a South African ice hockey defender and a national team player who passed away at the age of 36 on December 22, 2022, after a courageous battle with breast cancer. Born on July 7, 1986 in Port Elizabeth, she was a dedicated athlete who represented South Africa in international competitions, including the 2019 IIHF Ice Hockey Women's World Championship Division 2 qualification in Cape Town. Wilson's journey into ice hockey began later in life, and she quickly became a key player for the South African women's national team. In 2020, she helped secure a gold medal at the IIHF Women's World Championship Division 3. Shortly after this achievement, she was diagnosed with early stage triple negative breast cancer, a particularly aggressive form of the disease. Despite undergoing chemotherapy, the cancer had already spread it to her lungs. Faced with the escalating medical costs, she publicly appealed for financial assistance, raising nearly 560,000 rand of the 600,000 rand needed for specialized treatment not covered by the medical aid that she was under. Even as her health declined, Wilson returned to the ice in May 2022 for the IIHF Women's World Championship Division 2 Group B in Zagreb, in Croatia. Her participation was met with widespread support from the international hockey community, with teams displaying solidarity by wearing stickers in her honor. Her unwavering commitment to the sport and her resilience in the face of illness left a lasting impact on the teammates and fans alike. Wilson's legacy continues to inspire, and she is remembered for her dedication to the ice hockey and her role in raising awareness about breast cancer. We are raising awareness to everyone who has fought, or everyone who unfortunately passed on because of breast cancer. We will continue raising awareness until the end of the month. Now, that brings us to the end of the show. Where can people find you, Lolonga?
On Instagram, I am Lolonga. There's no spaces in between. And on TikTok, I am Lolonga.
And that's it for me. You can find me on social media as well. It is Samgele_M everywhere. Until next week, thank you for tuning in on Extra Time, Rajan Madiba's podcast, where we connect, inform, and engage.
The best youth station in the Bay. Madiba's Radio.
You are connected to The Call Out right here on Madiba's Radio, where we connect, inform, and absolutely engage. The name right here to the girl that you are hearing belongs to Katlego Mofokeng, also known as Girl with the Nice Pants on the Instagram streets. And I am not alone. With whom am I?
Top of the afternoon, Uvuyisanani. And I know I'm going to charge for your daily dose of sugar. Don't take me in too many doses, because you might have diabetes. The tagline has not changed, guys. We're here to bring you a scintillating episode. We have special guests for you today. Katlego, please make a segue for our guests to introduce themselves.
Well, this week alone has been very hard for student safety, but this has also been a common occurring incident over the years here at NMU. And we've decided, you know what, let's bring the big bosses in charge. Mm-hmm. The SAPS is actually in studio with us today, and they will be listening to all of the problems that we have right here at the station. I mean, at the institution. Mm-hmm. But more than anything, they'll be actually letting us know about the crime prevention unit that they're heading up and any details we may need to know relating to student safety. But now, we cannot just jump into a conversation without people introducing themselves. So, with whom are we in studio?
Yes, I'm Captain André Beetre. I'm with Nelson Mandela Bay District Office with Corporate Communication.
Awesome.
I also deal with all the media, so anything that the media needs to ask the police, they run through my office, and That is why we are here, because you've got an incident that you need to know more a little bit about.
Mm-hmm. Mm. We've seen you in a lot of news articles, so we're very, very aware of the name. Never made the acquaintance, never meet your face. So nice to meet you. Who else are we in studio with?
Good morning. I'm Sergeant Ramaro from Humut Police Station. I am the community policing official and the student coordinator.
Awesome. Yeah. And last but certainly not least.
Mm-hmm. L.Y. Well, this is Tim McGuire, the district chairperson of the Nelson Mandela Bay Youth Crime Prevention Desk. I'm a community policing activist as well as a victim support services activist.
Oh, thank you. You see, we have a lot of people with a lot of qualifications in the room. Okay,
a lot of important people today. I think we should just jump straight into the mud.
Absolutely.
And just get into the nitty gritty. I wanted to first ask this question: what does the Youth Prevention Desk do? What is their initiative, and what support are they willing to give to the university at large?
The duty of the Youth Crime Prevention Desk is to address crime, but obviously with their peers, which is the youth. And we have one established here at Varsity, fortunately, and we have had a few engagements, which one of them was at the off-campus residence, which is Laboria, right at the hotspot of our city. And we've also had a project. It was more of an outreach project where we went to Sheshire Home, a home of the people living with a disability. And we played a few games with them just to show that we do not only as young people engage in certain activities whom I cannot announce here. So yeah. That's what youth crime prevention, and I will leave to the district youth crime prevention chairperson to dwell more on it.
Yeah, so basically, what the Youth Crime Prevention Desk is, it's part of social crime prevention within the South African Police Service. So what happens is, these are community, civilians basically, who just form part of the crime prevention strategy of the South African Police Service. So through the data that the South African Police Service has, is that if you find that in terms of the population in South Africa, it's youth, it's more youth, right, than any other demographics within South Africa. So it's we'd find also that there's more youth committing crime, there's more youth that are victims of crime. So it would be best that you go and appear kind of a approach in terms of community policing strategies. So one of the pillars that the strategy has, the strategy is called the Integrated Youth Crime Prevention Strategy. It's a South African strategy. It's a South African Police Service strategy for the youth. Pillar number one is community policing. Pillar number two is moral fiber investment, bringing back the morals within society that has been lost, right? So the third pillar is youth empowerment, as well as the fourth one now being disabled and vulnerable youth empowerment, because we know we do have a lot of vulnerable people out there, such as your LGBTQIA+ community. We are there standing up for their rights, when it came to the Nelson Mandela Bay Pride March that happened Summer Strand. We were part of that as the district executive, as well as the Humut Youth Crime Prevention Desk as well. So that's where we are at, basically, as the Youth Crime Prevention Desks. So my role as the district chairperson is to oversee that the stations do have their Youth Crime Prevention Desks. So every precinct, but if I can just mention this, Humut has one of the most innovative and vibrant youth crime prevention desks. It's students, basically. And we have them led by Miss Leotwane Lesego. She's a student, and all of these things, we want to take the fight where the fight belongs. Youth should solve their own problems, right? And that's where it all forms part of the strategy that the South African Police Service has engaged in.
I like that. You mentioned all of your pillars, and they all work together. There is a high rate of youth unemployment in the country, and it makes sense then to empower the youth especially considering the fact that with that high youth unemployment, there would be more crimes against the youth or committed by the youth because of the fact that they have no other opportunities. But it also makes sense to include the youth in crime prevention strategies so as to ensure that there is a moral fiber within them. So we have seen right now within our community that on the 13th of October, unfortunately, due to a break-in, one student lost her life and another was critical in hospital. Yes. And this was a student at Nelson Mandela University. It brought into question the safety of students off campus and on campus, but it also brought into question the amount of crime in our community and how it's been handled and also how rapidly the police actually show up to these things. So, the main question now is, with everything happening, how do we ensure that the youth remain safe in their communities, particularly those who are registered at the institution?
Okay, I can answer on that one. Let us start, I think, with the incident that happened on Monday.
Mm.
It was a resident who was off campus, where two students were. A suspect came in, he was armed with a sharp object. And his aim was to commit a house robbery, in other words, rob these students.
Yeah.
He was after their cell phones
and, their laptops
or whatever other valuables they had, because the one thing that criminals do know is that students are normally funded. They get equipment to study, so they go with where the trends are. So people were having phones, whether or not it's a student or another adult, as of no concern really for the criminals. They want your phones, they want your laptops, they want your tablets. Obviously this criminal, we suspect that he knew that there were students in this place. He entered. Unfortunately, there was a stabbing taking place where the 23-year-old was fatally stabbed and killed on the premises. And the 20-year-old was taken to hospital with very serious wounds. We are happy to also say that she was released from hospital yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So she will be working closer to police when we do get an arrest, so that we can bring this criminal to book.
Yes.
One thing we need to add from our side about students, and let's call a spade,
mm-hmm.
What are students? Students are school leavers that have just come from their parents' houses that are now entering the adult world, where there's entertainment possibilities, and we know students like to celebrate, they like to use alcohol, they like to frequent places where other adults converge and having parties, and that creates a problem.
Mm-hmm.
That is where we find the mix of children which are now entering the adult world are now influenceable. They sometimes are very gullible. They will fall for all sorts of antics by very seasoned and well, if I could say, people with a lot of experience with crime or with sexual offenses in the adult world that now come in contact with these youngsters. And we need to reach out, and that's why we have these desks. And as this initiatives from the police service to talk to our children, because we know also how children are. When parents say, don't go there, it's dangerous, what do students do? They are rebelling towards that. They don't want to listen to their parents. So we will have to become that figure and also talk to our students to say, your parents were right, your parents were not wrong. You need to listen, and that's one of the things why I think we are here. We need to also speak that word, that our students hear it. They should listen. There is reasons why we're saying these things, because we've got the experience and the stats to prove that what we are saying is the truth. It is dangerous. There are certain things you should do and not do, and you need to follow that. Where do you, as students, hear those things? It's at these very institutions and MBZOs and meetings that the police have with you, where we will give you crime hints and tips and then to inform you about these things.
Mm.
I think our students are very gullible sometimes. They're thinking that walking around with nice earpods or Bluetooth headsets with their phones, and they're continuously on the WhatsApp or the TikToks, and they are blatantly unaware of what is going on around them. Now, from us, from the police service, we know how a criminal thinks and operates. We know that they are walking around looking for people that are distracted, that have got valuables with them, and the only thing in that criminal's mind is, how do I get that property as fast as possible and with the least amount of resistance from that person? And they normally arm themselves with either firearms or sharp objects like knives. Should they encounter resistance from their victims, they are not afraid to use those tools, if I could say, that they take with them to either protect themselves or to hurt their victims. So in lieu of all this, I think our students should be seeing a picture that they might be walking in a mall or walking in a street, going home or being in your residence, not locking the door, thinking that you are safe, and maybe you are not safe. And I think our students, the basic principles of keeping yourself safe, you know, keeping your doors locked as a general rule. If there's no other people, if you're just one lady or two ladies in a certain place, rather keep the doors locked. Lock yourself in the house or in your residence. Don't just leave the door open for any person to just come in. If somebody wants to come in, they can knock, and there's normal procedures and how you can identify who it is, and then let them in or let them stay out. So I think those are the type of things that our students need to think of more often about their own safety. Walking in the street with earpods, being distracted, or going to the bank, putting the phone in your back pocket, you are an attraction. You are actually now enticing criminals to come to you.
So
I think that is an awareness we need to create.
Captain, I want to have like this triple fold question. One is that, what actually goes through the mind of a criminal where they're able to pull out an object and stab someone else who also is a human being, and how can one who is robbed de-escalate a situation like that when they see that, okay, I'm backed up against the corner, this person has a firearm or an object like that. What is the situational awareness or maybe better option to do?
Okay. As a general rule, if you're going to be a victim of a crime, don't try to be a hero. Don't try to fight them. Unless you know you are much bigger and you've better weapons or better equipment like your physical body than your perpetrator, and that you know you can safely and quickly take down your assailant. If you are fragile, if you're a girl, if you're a boy, and it's two or three suspects, they're having firearms, don't, rather not resist. Rather lose what you have, your valuables, than losing your life or your health. Rather let them have it. We open a case, we'll go look for the suspects, and we most probably can find your equipment back. That is a better option. Your second part, or your first part, when you asked what goes on into the mind of the criminal, mostly in general, we are not psychologists, but what we do find is criminals want the shortest and fastest way to get the stuff and get away. That is what's in their minds. So if you're going to give resistance, you're making it difficult for him to get it. If he's very hard up in getting your phone, he might end up stabbing you. If you are holding on to it and not wanting him to have it, he might pull out a knife to further convince you to let go of your handbag. But now you are bleeding for an object which you could replace. Or you might even have insurance for it, or your parents have insurance for it. Rather let it go than just fighting them. But prevention is better than cure. Don't brandish your valuables in open where other people can see it and maybe entice people to come and rob you.
I'm so glad that you spoke about statistics, because unfortunately the reality is, we have to be realistic. Gqeberha, if I'm not mistaken, or the Bay Area, has one of the highest murder rates in the country. We've seen this with police statistics that are released quarterly, if I'm not mistaken. And what that means is the fact that people, or criminals rather, are not afraid of the loss of a life. And it says quite a lot about the situation we find ourselves in as young people and students. Now, when a crime prevention desk also is available for us, and you're saying they're very innovative in the way they approach students, what we want to know is, how do we form part of these types of desks or initiatives? How do we join and form part of something like that?
Oh, well, Katlo, for you to join, you first you shouldn't have a criminal record under your name, because you might find that we may be engaging in meetings where some of the sensitive information is shared. Mm. And then you have to be obviously between the ages of 18 and 35, so which is the youth age group. And what else do they have to possess again? At this, okay, I will also refer to my criteria, mm-hmm. because I'm in the in a quite tricky precinct. Mm-hmm. So in my precinct, I had to choose from the students, because you are our youth, mm-hmm. currently. So what we did is you were the most targeted, as he had mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. You are the most targeted, and you possess the commodities which are wanted by the criminals.
True.
You see, so that's when we also had to also establish this youth crime prevention desk, in order for you guys to engage with your peers, because sometimes peers understand one another.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there is this negative connotation that you have against the police. So maybe when someone else with the same understanding or the same background would understand where you're coming from, and they would actually, you'd be on par, you'd share notes. Hence this crime prevention desk came about. Mm-hmm. So that's the criteria we're currently using in my policing precinct, because each and every policing precinct has its own different dynamics. So in my one, I had to utilize this one.
Mm. And just to add on what Sachin is saying, is that Humewood Police Station, the entire precinct, it's got a lot. It's got a student population,
mm.
right? So what her strategy was to focus on students, mm. as her youth. So, but also, it's not closed out. It's not an exclusive club.
Mm-hmm.
Of youth. Like, you can approach Saj. I'm sure Saj will share her number, where, you know, if you're interested, you can just call her. We've got kind of like within the desk, there are like portfolios or subcommittees where people just address certain things in terms of the pillars, like your community policing, you're going out there doing community awareness. How then do we deal with matters such as, you know, gender-based violence, you know, that is quite prevalent within students, like the student population, you know. So one of those are like one of the things that the Youth Crime Prevention Desk deals with, you know, addressing those nitty-gritty problems, or the teething problems that students face within the institution, as well as outside of the institution. I think just to add on what Kepi is saying about students and how they've found this newfound freedom, you know, away from home. The challenge that we're currently having is with the NSFAS allowance.
Eesh.
You know, when the NSFAS allowance goes out, you find that bottle stores are packed to the max,
mm-hmm.
and then that's when the crime then shoots up. You know, it spikes,
mm-hmm.
and you know the most sad part about it is that there's a huge spike in gender-based violence and sexual violence, you know, during that period. And then cases are withdrawn. So the youth desk is there to basically empower even the victims to say, do not withdraw cases,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you are a victim. Because now what you're doing is you're just raising up the stats, but there's no justice at the end of the day. You know, so you know, maybe on this platform as well, I'd like to encourage all of the victims of gender-based violence, incidents, to please come forward and report such matters to the South African Police Service.
I think I like the fact that there are different structures aimed at helping the youth with whatever problems that they have, especially considering the fact that on campus we have our transformation office. And our transformation office is very important with regards to things like gender-based violence. I know oftentimes they sit with the case and they sit a student through whatever problem it is that they have, and then they refer them to the police, but they walk the journey with them. So knowing that there's also a structure outside of the institution that allows somebody to actually seek justice is very necessary, because sometimes somebody's afraid to come forth, especially when the perpetrator is in the institution or holds some type of power within the institution. Yes. So knowing that there are structures outside the school is important. I've noticed that there are periods of time, like you said, when NSFAS allowances are brought out. It is exam season now. Everybody is consistently studying. So they're going to labs and whatever else, and they're charging their phones and whatnot. And you'll find there'll be like a long chain message on WhatsApp that says, be on the lookout for this particular polo. They're taking laptops, they're taking tablets, they're taking phones, because they know that this is the most important time for students. Students are not really looking, they're distracted, school is tough, it's not looking cute, your marks are horrible, and you're walking up and down, and you're not really thinking about your surroundings, and it's mainly because of school stress. And from then on, that's when people take advantage. And even during those times when there is the NSFAS allowance, and everybody say, ingenile, and then all of a sudden they're in the club, blowing it up, having a good time, and then when they walk out, there's a knife to their neck. And it's because of the fact that they are posing, I guess what you said, an enticing picture to these people. So I think what's mainly important with events such as the one that you said we're going to have at the end of the month is, I guess, conscientizing students about what it means to be safe in an environment like this, against the reality of what we actually have. This city right now is not as safe as it was before, and now it just means being more vigilant, which is a scary thought, I guess, for students who are just like leaving the comfort of home and the safety of home. It's being vigilant and being aware of your surroundings. How can we on-campus students make sure that we are also consistently being vigilant? Or what measures can we put in place ourselves as a community of students to ensure that we kind of prevent some of these things from happening?
And to further add to that question of how we as students can be vigilant, what are the actual structures put in place to make sure that students are protected also? You know what I mean? Because students can be vigilant to a certain amount, but then you have protection services within the school. How are you working with those people and within the school to make sure that, like, okay, you know what? We are actually all in collusion with one another.
If I can answer on that one quickly, we do not have enough police to be everywhere. What we do have at all stations is patrol vehicles, and then on the other side, complaint vehicles.
Okay.
Now, your complaint vehicles are just driving from one complaint to the next, opening cases, opening dockets. They are not the ones that are driving around looking for people. The patrol vehicles, the ones that are driving around, which is called the crime prevention unit, they are purely there visiting the schools, visiting the clinics, visiting the university, visiting the ATMs, visiting the churches. There's a whole list of places that needs to be, and we cannot place a guard at any of these places at one time. So I know the campus have got their own security. You've got a security company that is safeguarding the premises, the ins and the outs. I'm not sure about the whole infrastructure of them, if they have guards at the residencies and things like that, but that is up to the university to do that.
Yeah.
Same applies with your home at home. You cannot expect to have a policeman stationed everywhere, just standing around looking. We cannot. We have patrol vehicles up and down. So from that is what we attempt to do from our side, is knowing where we know these guys are frequenting and knowing where they are robbing. We are having our crime prevention guys patrolling there, up and down, being visible, showing that we are in the area and discouraging them to commit their crime.
Oh, I think we can appreciate that quite a great deal, but there's an event that's coming up. I'd like you to tell us more about it and how students on campus can come through to that.
The event will be on the 31st of October at 1400 hours. And we are going to involve Ulrika.
That's 2 p.m., guys.
Just in case.
Just in case. Speaking in military terms, 1400 hours. King in trailer.
Yeah.
We'll have our external stakeholders as well, which is the Liquor, Eastern Cape Liquor Board.
Mm-hmm.
And we also roped in the Protection Services, Nelson Mandela University Protection Services. And of course, our Youth Crime Prevention Desk will also form part of that.
Okay.
And I believe that the DVC will also be part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, South African Police Service, HUMUT.
Oh, okay. The innovative desk is going to be there too. If you want to put faces to the voices that you've been hearing, definitely show up. Where is this going to be taking place?
Currently, it will be here on campus.
Okay.
We're still planning to get a venue.
Okay, understandable. I think we've learned quite a lot from this. And as students, yes, you're right. Peers need to educate each other. And I think you can only do so much in saying stay in groups, never leave a friend alone, you know, consistently be in it, hide whatever valuables you have, especially if you're going out with your friends, and it's those kind of things, remain vigilant and the like. And if you need more information, definitely show up to this event. It's on the 31st of October at 2 o'clock, and there will be multiple stakeholders there. And I think the Liquor Board being there is very important, considering the fact that quite a lot of crimes
mm-hmm.
are related to people being highly intoxicated.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to just take it as a reality, you know, the young people are drinking.
I think before we close everything off, I want to have another question directed to the captain about the investigation that's happening right now.
Yeah.
With the victim that was discharged, has she been able to maybe point towards a direction maybe you can catch the perpetrator?
At this point in time, you must remember that we have not arrested the suspect, so it is a safety risk to identify, so we're not going to identify our victim.
Yeah.
And obviously she still has some health issues. She has been released from hospital, so we do not wish to have more comment on that. I think it's acceptable. We are thinking about our safety of our victim, and also, but we will be as fast as that we can get the information and get some more pointers on what the possible suspect looks like and all of that. We will do so, and we will make sure we get this perpetrator behind bars as fast as possible.
If anyone has any information at all regarding to that perpetrator, who do they reach out to? Which number do they call?
Okay. We've got Warrant Officer, Sergeant Baikis. He's the investigating officer at UMUD. He's 073-130-3013. That's the number to contact.
Could you please say it again?
Okay, it's 073-130-3018.
Mm-hmm.
It's Sergeant Ridwan Baikis. Mm-hmm. He's the investigating officer. Or if you want to remain anonymous, you can use the Crime Stop number, mm-hmm. 08600-10111.
Mm-hmm. 10111. The OG number.
Exactly.
Yes. Thank you so much for joining us in studio. I think this is an important conversation we've needed to have, but student safety still is still a very big concern, especially with off-campus residences,
mm-hmm.
especially. I think even the accreditation process itself now is under question, okay. because how do you accredit residences where there's not enough security? And you ask yourself, I mean, with vulnerable groups like young women and the LGBTQIA+ community, how do you ensure that they are safe? How do we ensure that these residences are supplied with as much security as possible, but also not disenfranchising or maybe charging students more for accommodation as a result of the expenses for safety and security?
I think the chairperson has something to add.
I think it's a perfect point that you're raising currently right now, because it's in line with what the South African Police Service has implemented at the university.
Mm-hmm.
There's a structure called the Campus Community Safety Forum,
yeah,
which is chaired by Mr. Lieutenant Jack, the TVC of the institution. In that forum, this is where all things are raised to the management and all other stakeholders, like your security companies that are operating within the area, private security companies that,
yeah,
are operating like in your central area,
mm-hmm,
you know, where it's like far from the campus,
yeah,
right? So off campus and all of that. But, you know, there's a lot that still needs to be done, mm-hmm, in terms of commitment from other stakeholders, so that we can see a change in what's happening. You mentioned the issue of how violent crime has been embedded within the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the current situation in terms of the economy and socio-economic issues, how people are not accessing economic opportunities, and knowing very well that students, there are many students who are coming from outside of the Bay Area,
mm-hmm,
right? And how vulnerable they are. So it's like, ooh, what the captain said, that these guys will always go for the easy targets,
yeah,
and students are easy targets,
mm-hmm,
you know? And so bringing a point like this issue of enticing these guys, so it's also a factor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because this newfound independence is a problem. It's just that now we need to control how we behave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the violent crime that is happening due to alcohol abuse as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like, for instance, your gender-based violence, your sexual violence, your rapes and all of that, it's generated in the main. The transformation office, Dr. Lavender, will tell you that,
mm-hmm,
you know, contributing factor is alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So the Youth Crime Prevention Desk is there, and we are aware of these things. I mean, quite happy that the university has embraced us also to form part of these structures,
mm-hmm,
because I do represent the structure in that forum,
mm-hmm,
and what we're addressing basically in the forum is key issues,
mm-hmm,
right? I know in George campus,
mm-hmm,
they also have their own CCSF, the campus,
oh, wow,
the Campus Community Safety Forum.
Mm-hmm.
Recently at Missionville campus, we launched one there also.
Much needed.
Yeah, so we were supposed to have an Imbizo, students in Imbizo last week on the 9th, but
mm,
obviously we couldn't because of the SRC elections.
Mm.
So, but we are always running with these things, but obviously we need time and we need students' commitment to it as well.
Just again for our audience at home, how can we get in touch with the student the desk prevention crime prevention desk? How can we get in touch, and how can we, like, which offices do we go to, and everything that is
such a rubber room? I think, look, so we do have an executive, right,
mm-hmm,
at Mount Road, at Hume Hood and at Mount Road.
Mm.
So, but here for Hume Hood, we have Willis Holutwane, the chairperson,
mm-hmm,
and her number is 069-358-7492. And then we have Mr. Tsepo Mulatundi, who's the PRO, right? 064-430-5760.
That's one of our own.
Yeah. So
we recognize the
event. So that's what we want to do. We want students who are and youth who are willing enough to value their own safety.
Mm.
You know, because we understand that the university is a place where, you know, it's a community on its own.
Mm.
Out of university, you guys are gonna go out and build a proper and prosperous South Africa. So we want young people who will value their safety and will value their life, and those of others.
I like that they're embedded in our systems, because
mm-hmm,
TEPO is the reason why we understand so much about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I can imagine each of the people in your executive, in their individual communities,
yes,
bringing this vast amount of knowledge allows everybody else to be empowered around them. It's basically the essence of Ubuntu. Them knowing the information that they do about your crime prevention desk empowers the rest of us to know just the same information.
Exactly.
So thank you so very much for all of the work that you do.
For the opportunity.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was it on our side with the crime prevention desk. Excuse my pronunciation. I'm very grateful that we got to have them on studio. And hopefully this message reaches out to everybody and to all students who are maybe in danger. This is who you contact. And let's us help each other in order to prevent another crime from happening such as this. Thank you so much for joining us on studio.
Oh yes, I like
Medivas Radio. Thank you again for our guests for coming on to the show. Now we're gonna move on to the second part of our segment. Kat, the reason I'm sighing is because
there's so much.
Ay, man,
there's so much.
Nelson Mandela University, what are you doing to
me? Scandals
on scandals. What's happening with SRC's elections? Let's first talk about the postponement. Just like
the second postponement.
Hey, manna.
Okay.
Mind you, the elections were supposed to be held at the last week of what was the month before October, guys?
September.
Of September.
25th and 26th September was supposed to be our first election date. Mm-hmm. Remember that ugly poster that they had that looked like a free trial from Canva?
Hey, man.
The PixArt looking picture. Yeah. It said 25th and 26th September. And then from then on, it was postponed because not a lot of time had been given for everybody to campaign and do the work. And they were like, okay, fine, we'll move it to October. And they said 8th and 9th of October. Mind you, your school is not the one that told us. It was representatives, student representatives that confirmed it.
How are you
first
telling people to campaign? We knew that there's an election happening. So you're going to campaign in 1 week now, suddenly, before the elections.
Exactly.
Come on, guys.
Then they moved it to the 8th and 9th, and on the 8th, people started getting access codes. Fine, we're voting. And then I get called by somebody who was registered at the institution last year but isn't registered this year. And he was like, I just finished voting. I'm like, what do you mean? He said, I got an access code and I voted. And then started the drama. Mm-hmm. So apparently our consulting group, KDBS, who is in charge of elections, online elections at the school, unfortunately submitted a 2024 template that also had students who were registered, obviously, at the institution last year. First time entering students at Nelson Mandela this year in 2025, were unfortunately not granted access codes. And that meant that the election process was basically null and void. It was decided by the end of the day, I think at around 4 o'clock, they were like, Shem, thanks for voting, but it doesn't count.
We're going to vote again in
this
2 days.
This was a test run. And they were like, you know what? Maybe tomorrow, on the 9th of October, things will start looking better. We'll be able to vote tomorrow. The next day, they were like, nope, we're postponing elections.
That makes second postponement.
This is the second postponement, which is all good and fine, but you know, our student representatives are not going to take this lying down. They were not just going to chill. The EFFYC was just like, what is happening? Why? Why is it that they submitted this particular template? Mm-hmm. Something seems very funny. Something is off. Makes sense. Sasco said, we sat in a meeting with these people, and KDBS allegedly said that they would remove the votes from those who were registered in 2024 and not in 2025.
So let's clarify this. What does this mean? It means that the person that who is in charge of the statistic and counting the votes has the power to remove votes, to say, no, this is how many votes are there. Mm-hmm. This person gets to have this vote and this person has
they have a lot of access.
Ay, man.
And it brought into question whether or not our elections really were free and fair. Mm-hmm. And especially because if you said something like that, even if it wasn't passing, it's going to raise a big red flag. What do you mean?
You have the power to remove votes?
We didn't even know that was something that was possible.
We thought it was automatic with their, like, okay, exactly. Automated a calculation.
So also, how can you tell the difference? Like, what is it? And I mean, I can understand we all get, like, our own unique access codes and whatnot, but it brings into question the feasibility of having an online voting system now in this day and age, because initially it was for COVID and it made sense for us to have that, but now,
which I remember when I went to that conference of the IEC in East London, this was one of the conversations that was had. They're like, okay, you're gonna bring online voting
into the impoverished communities, into the rural areas. Okay, that's all fine and good. But then who actually is in charge of making sure that these elections are actually fair and trustworthy and not rigged? Same thing that happened in America back in 2018 with Donald Trump. They said that Russia had some implications to do with the elections. It is so easy in this modern day of age for an algorithm to just be written to make sure that 25% of this party's voters can vote for the other party while thinking that, okay, you voted for this party, but the calculations is for that party. So it's like, hey.
Can we really trust modern day technology to actually reflect the will of the people?
The democracy.
Exactly. Yo, especially considering the fact that last week alone, can we trust that modern day technology is going to reflect the will of the people?
That is a whole book.
Right?
That is a whole book.
Right?
That is a whole book.
It's questionable. I mean, last week alone, I'm not going to lie to you. I had already like future plan. When they first postponed, I was like, okay, good stuff. 8th and 9th is elections and whatever else. After that, I'm going to go home and I'm going to relax. Next thing you know, elections are cancelled. I'm home. People are talking about, hey, man, press statements are being released.
Yeah.
People are doing whatever. There's campaigns going on. Last minute razzmatazz here and there. Feeding students, whatnot. Campaigning last minute. And it begs the question, okay, fine. You're able to push through and campaign. But like, what does this mean about the students' trust in the system? Participation is already very, very low. Only like 34% of the student population here at Nelson Mandela University participated in SRC elections. Only 34%. That's so little people.
And it is a reflection macro politically to the whole aspect of South Africa.
Yeah.
To show that even in the micro sense, in universities, people aren't participating in votes. Thus, same thing, macro politics in South Africa. People aren't participating in the politics of South Africa.
Because what they're scared of is whether or not their will is really being represented on a large scale. And I mean, I can understand that. I'm not going to lie to you. After, like, I went through, I voted, I screenshotted, I posted on my status. And then at some point in time, I was like, what is the point if this is not even going to count? Like, what happens now? And I'm the one who believes in, like, the legislative process and the electoral process. But even I was tired and I was like, but, like, what is the actual point of this? Like, what do you mean you keep changing dates? What does it say about you as a structure?
I guess it's simply you get to have some share beds and some shirts.
Side eye.
No, you get to have some.
Not using spice.
Eventually, the elections did go through.
They really did.
Shepherds were headed out.
Amen. Stockies were headed out. Many things were happening. There were shirts. Also, I'm judging.
Why?
I'm judging students of Nelson Mandela University. We saw you in those comment sections talking about bring t-shirts to our residents and we'll vote for you. What is wrong with you? What decision-making skills are you making? Why are you doing this? And it wasn't just under one specific party. There were a bunch. So what's going on with you guys? Why is it that you need a shirt in order for you to... Also, what do those shirts have? I'm so confused about like the shirt situation.
They want something to sleep with.
That's sad.
That is sad.
That is so sad. Like, I want better for you and I want you to want better for yourself.
Again, guys, everything that happens at the micro, at the micro level is happening at the macro level. Okay. The shirts serve as a symbolism to South African citizens as a whole. Because what are the shirts? The shirts are the 350 grants. The shirts are the little that our political parties are actually putting. They're the littlest effort.
The bare minimum.
All you want, Joanna, from the people who are in charge of your schooling and of your youth.
Imagine.
You just want a shirt. You just want a shirt. These people are in charge of whether or not you get to have security on campus. These people are in charge whether or not you get to have a shuttle deliver you on
the
time.
The acknowledgement of debt at the very beginning of your registration.
Exactly.
The tuition fees. They're in charge of so many things.
But a shirt.
Like.
You just want a shirt.
Guys.
Again, the party that's giving you the shirt that you're going to vote for, because they're right in front of you now. They've given you the shirt and they say, press for this
and
one.
And you're voting.
Press for this one. Press for this one. Because they just gave you their shirt. Do they know their manifesto? Do they Do they understand it? Are they going to implement it perfectly? Not even perfectly, but are they actually going to try to implement it? It's like, but...
It is definitely... It's worrying. I think mainly it wasn't even because of like the shirt thing. I side-eyed a lot of you.
Mm-hmm.
But this campaign season showed us quite a lot. Look, if we're going to look at things in a grand scale and look at it from the beginning of the year, I mentioned this before and I'm going to mention it again. At the beginning of the year, there was the freshers incident.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a divide and conquer thing.
Different students has been crazy this year.
You don't think you just realize it now that actually there were bodies that dropped at the beginning of the year. Exactly. Unfortunately, students lost their lives at the freshers event. And that weekend alone had us seeing quite a lot of students who passed away. Mm. There was the ones at Freshers, there were those off campus who were killed by a shop owner. Then there was a res incident that happened. And then there was obviously student hunger over the year and whatever else. And there was registration and tuition problems. And then came now campaigning season. Campaigning season, guys, by right, is not supposed to be the first time you see your representatives.
Mm-hmm.
It's not supposed to be the first time you see these people actually on campus at all. This is supposed to be a, oh, I know them. I know their name. I've seen these people so often on campus that I kind of know who they are and who they represent. But for some parties, it was the first time we were seeing them. So those of us, because
some parties was the first time they were seeing each other. like, oh, you're here.
You're still part of us. Mm. We went to many a BGM. We sat in many of these events, and I remember we sat late.
We're not going to mention any parties, though.
Yeah, but we sat very late for most of these events, and we've seen students actually want to be a part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen them sit through all of these events and vote for who they wanted to be actually representing them. And that's great and fine. And then we had to ask, what are the issues on campus that are so big that need to be? Food parcels, the clinic system, shuttles,
mm-hmm.
registration and tuition,
residence,
safety.
See, those are six issues that we can clearly line up.
Exactly.
Clearly line up.
And now you ask, okay, what are you doing with regards to all of this? Do you have a tangible plan, a plan of action that's going to help you once you're actually in office? And many people were like, yes, we have this, this, that, and the other. And it's great. And then time came for them to campaign and do most. Then the 8th happened and they were postponed. And it was like, The biggest complication or the biggest source of contention was, do you know the amount of money we've put into campaigning?
Mm-hmm.
We've been putting a lot of money into not only making sure that students are aware.
Like I said last week, they were doing the most.
Imagine having to feed all of those students in order to just be like, look, we're visible and whatever else. That's a lot of money. Feeding your constituents themselves. Also, making sure that the people that you are running with do not tire. You have to make sure you feed those people. You have to make sure that they have water. You have to make sure that they're set so they can represent whatever party you're a part of. And then the main issue was, what is SGD doing about whatever it is that's happening with elections? Because
mm-hmm.
by right, SGD is involved and they're in charge of this. So we asked the question with the dean of students, what must happen? Then they asked the students with the director of SGD, like, what must happen? What are you guys doing? What ended up happening? Also, there are so many people involved in this process. How do you get a 2024 template out to mm-hmm. a consulting company and not one person bats an eyelash?
Exactly. And is it an honest mistake to make?
Is it?
Is it? And then what was the SASCO's response to everything? Because I hear we're going to court.
Bona.
We have beef with the SASCO SDG did not come on Facebook. To play. We're saying things that are on Facebook, guys. Like
this is information. Also, but they've also had like press release statements and media statements and the like. And if you actually are interested in seeing that, go ahead. But for the most part, when the 8th and 9th happened, SASCO was just like, after they heard the whole, we'll remove the votes of those people, it was like, which means we can't trust you.
Mm-hmm.
When as a consulting company, you're able to rig votes, that doesn't sound right. That doesn't sound free and fair. And they said, it doesn't make sense for you to say the 13th and the 14th is the next time that people should go out and vote. That doesn't make sense. elections are not free and fair, considering what you've said, considering that you've
changing, you're changing the dates. You can change who's who has the voting,
exactly, voting system, the favors, access codes and all that. A lot of things that happened on those days, especially last week, were called into question. One of the things that were called into question was Daso being able to send SMSs to students on election day.
Yo, yo.
Encouraging them to vote.
Citizen Amaxhosa, when you are uncovering,
just because what do you mean you're sending? Where did you get these numbers? First, exactly. Question important. Then Sasko asked, okay, what is the legitimacy of the voting process if that can happen? And then they said, you know what? Actually, Sasko, Basma, MKSM decided to stand together and say, you know what? All of us are saying these elections are not going to happen on the 13th and the 14th, and we are going to stand on business. Now, I was not in the province on Monday, but apparently the masses were there. You know, the people came in numbers, but the voting did not stop.
Mm.
Voting happened on the 13th, voting happened on the 14th, but unfortunately on the 13th, something else happened.
Mm.
Those students, the one student who lost her life, who entered online,
mm,
and the student that is currently in hospital.
Mm.
And when that happened, it raised the question of student safety on and off campus. And it was, if you cannot even keep the people at your school safe, what does it mean about your leadership skills?
Mm-hmm.
But now the thing is, that stopped being, it was important that it not be a campaign slogan or anything about politics. I'm glad they didn't politicize it. It was more so, let's come together, guys, to stand against whatever is happening.
Mm.
Hence the march.
Not every party got the memo of not politicizing the murder.
Exactly.
And we should we mention names?
It got murky because one of your leaders was saying, look, in as much as like it's all sad and stuff, votes are closing in a couple of hours.
Yes.
So, let's cry, but like, let's cry and online.
Voting. Voting.
And that was insensitive. It was also like, it felt like it was in bad taste. I wrote a status earlier this week and I was just saying, the loss of lives should not have to be turned into a movement to be deemed valuable.
Exactly.
And it should not be sensationalized to be broadcasted.
Yo, say that again for the people in the back, please.
The loss of lives should not have to be turned into a movement to be deemed valuable.
Mm.
And it should not be sensationalized to be broadcasted. This is not a... That was not a moment for people to show their political prowess or their ability to call in media.
Mm.
It was a moment for us to all stand in unison and say, look, at this institution, we haven't been safe for a minute.
And to mourn. Mm.
2023, 2024, and now 2025, we've lost way too many lives. One is too many, but we've lost way too many lives to a lot of violence here at the school. So let's stand up and let's bring a memorandum of demands to, you know, Mbizweni, hence the march. Now, all lives, the Student Lives Matter march happened, and they brought the memorandum of demands. And one thing about your school, they can write a great press release.
No, I they do.
Look, I have to commend her. Uzandile Ngwendu is in the communications and marketing division of our school. And she, the thing is, I've sat in rooms with her, and we've spoken about student issues. And she demonstrates a vast understanding of the things that are happening on campus.
Mm.
She provides a clear understanding of the things that are happening on campus and relating them to management. Now, it's all good and well that, you know, she understands these things, but management's actions do not match many of these release statements. And therein lies the problem. The students are saying, you guys look good in the media space. On SABC, you can talk a great deal about this is what we're doing, you know, to help the students and whatever. But we have a lived reality that is completely different to what you're saying out there in the media.
Mm.
And that's the main problem. The memorandum of demands is not just it didn't come out of nowhere. It's something that has been ongoing for
that's
a long
sad
period of
thing
time.
About politics, this game, or just in general, that if you can speak good, people believe whatever it is that you're saying.
Because you're smooth with it.
No one is actually saying, what are you actually saying, though?
Mm-hmm.
That's why influential leaders like Abo Steve Biko,
mm,
they actually died for what they were saying. They were actually putting principle to the words in which they were putting out there.
Mm.
another thing, the reason why everybody's like, give me shirts, is because people are just not conscientized to the fact that, okay, this party is this like this, and this party is this like this. Mm-hmm. What do I need as a student? What are my needs? People are just, we're just not conscientized. Mm-hmm. And we will let the school market itself communicate that it's doing this and that and that, and send out all the memos.
And we'll be quiet.
And we'll be quiet about it, and we'll move on, because the bare minimum is what we're taught to accept.
Exactly. I noticed it when, you know, I was voting at first during the 8th and 9th and stuff. Guys, I'm a disabled student. Now, what I have is an invisible disability, right? I have epilepsy, temporal lobe.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know when they were flicking lights during one of the BGMs? It was actually triggering me. I almost had a seizure.
Oh, my goodness.
Exactly. So, you don't notice things like that. Like, with invisible disabilities, you really can't tell somebody's, like, you know, has this illness or whatever else. Mm. And now, when it was time to vote, you vote for a disability officer. Only two parties.
Kid.
Only two parties had a disability officer. Which begs the question, what was the list? What names were put forth? Because we've also heard about the red list, where students are deemed not able to be candidates for SRC because of a specific type of criteria. Mm. But now, if I myself am somebody who is living with a disability, and now I'm only seeing two parties there, you're asking yourself, do the other parties not care about the fact that there are disabled students on campus? Did they not submit names? Are they interested at all in our struggles? What else happens? So it begs quite a lot of questions, but it also comes into, I think that's what you're saying, conscientizing students. Guys, the candidate list was decided on. The red list was there. No candidates replaced any others. Mm. No one would know this if they didn't ask, if there was not enough information. People didn't even know the list of candidates was available.
SDGs in charge of this, right?
Exactly. Mm. There was a list of candidates available. Only two from a specific party, 10 from another, 3 from another, and 5 from another. And you're thinking to yourself, why are these numbers uneven if they're all protesting for, if they're all contesting for central SRC? Shouldn't there be a same amount of people? And they're saying, no, other people were on the red list. So you're telling me there was no one else that could replace the people who fell into the red list?
This is what we talk about when we talk about in economics, that when bureaucracy is a red tape in front of the actual democracy to being achieved.
You get bureaucratic red tape that stops you from actively being a part of a democracy.
Yeah.
And even if you're someone who's willing to be a part of democracy. Mm-hmm. So it begs the question, what kind of institution are we living in?
Mm-hmm.
But also, what do you think? Now we've got outcomes from the elections. But Sasko said, look, we are going to the High Court and we're asking them to declare the 2025 elections null and void.
Mm-hmm.
And from then, we need to have an interim SRC to decide on matters that are going to affect students in 2026. We need to have a student parliament sit down and many other things that they asked for in their media release. This was, they had a press briefing last week, Sunday, from
Sunday. So that's the coalition between SASCO, PASMA, and MK.
Yes. Mm. So all three of them were just sitting there. This is their demand. SASCO even went further and said, we're going to take it to court.
Yeah, man.
We have lawyers on retainer.
Let me show you my talent.
We don't play these things. And this is what they're doing. So whatever the outcome is at the High Court may quite literally affect whatever happened within the elections of this year. But now, the greater question is, what does it mean for the student body? What is it that you guys want? Do you want them declared null and void? The 34% of people that decided that they're going to vote. There are so many eligible voters.
You mean people the 34% of people who got new shirts and sherbets?
You know what I mean?
Also, I also got a sherbet, guys.
I
did. I did.
What is wrong?
And a lollipop.
Where were they? I couldn't even ask where they were.
You were out of the province.
I was out of the province.
We were cruising very nicely. We were eating dinner this
night. What a mess, guys. But honestly, I think it does beg the question. I think to our listeners, we need to ask, what is it that you want to happen from here on forward? And let it not be about specific parties or whatever else, but what is the reflection of the democracy on campus? And are we seeing it within the institution?
Mm-hmm.
Because we've begged for student safety measures to be put on campus and off campus. Did you know a roof fell through at one of the on-campus residences?
Hey, Banna.
Fell into a room.
I'm serious. Roof caved in. Did nobody get injured, at least?
No. Luckily, no one was in the
room. On campus?
On campus.
So, meaning the whole building is not
exactly safe. It's not up to par. Then there's the accreditation process for off-campus residences and the entire mess that happened with NSFAS at the beginning of the year. There's people that need to deal with this.
There are people who are student representatives. There are students who left the school. Sorry to speak over you, but the students who left literally in April, 2 months into the whole semester, they had to be like, no, we don't afford. Imagine. We have to go. We have to literally leave.
And I can't live in debt. I think for me, I've been, I guess I'm speaking from a place of privilege. This is not my first degree. Makes sense. So obviously I do not have any funding. But now the one sole provider of my funding passed away. So now I'm sitting here with a massive amount of debt. And I know that I still have to acknowledge said debt at the beginning of the year next year. And then I still have to push and write a bunch of letters to all the stakeholders and constituencies that are necessary in order for me not only to register for my academic classes, but to register for on-campus living. Mind you, there's still things like I have my invisible disability and a bunch of other things that are in play. You can imagine I'm going to need student representatives for this.
Yo.
So let's say we declared this null and void. What happens to students like me? What happens to students who have been cut off from NSFAS?
There won't be any effective leadership.
Exactly.
Especially in February.
So how do you how are you going to represent the interests of students who are going through the most, that you know are going to go through the most? What happens now? What does an interim SRC look like? What does it comprise of? What's the criteria for
and
entrance?
And going home in December and coming back on the 15th of January, hopefully. 15th of January is early.
And
hopefully,
begging that they don't push you out.
Hopefully. And even then, we're still going to have 2 months of a whole mess again of NSFAS of saying, okay, here's protests. Oh, no, our students are not doing this. Oh, we're not doing this.
Then we're going to have press releases. The institution understands the gravity of the problems that the students are facing. And we are working hand in hand and making sure that this happens. And you're like, okay.
They should go hire you.
Don't pee on me and tell me it's raining. Be so serious right now.
Peak South Africa. Peak South Africa. That's one of my favorite sayings. Oh, like, South Africa will pee on your leg and tell you it's raining for real, for real.
Like, I need people to just, I think we need to understand it realistically. That we do need representatives to help us, but they need to have our interests at heart. And we've seen the way things have played out. We're going to have to see how things play out in the at the High Court. But I mean, this is the same institution that every single year gets an interdict from the same High Court that Sasko went to.
Exactly.
And yeah, I mean, Madlanga Commission of Inquiry has always been telling us that the judiciary is not really on our side.
Nobody is on our side in South Africa. It's a mafia state.
Murky waters.
That is a whole different topic, people. That's all we have for you today. Just to be personal and be vulnerable and be truthful to you guys, I have an exam in 1 hour. Not an exam, a test. So let's go do that.
Let's get this education.
I just have the vibes. You know what it is. I hope you guys are keeping safe out there and have voted and are conscientizing yourself to politics and everything. I am Uvi Sanan Wakanom Chacho, your daily dose of sugar every day. I know you need the sugar. I'm playing. And I am never alone. I am with...
You're with Katlego Mofokeng, also known as Girl with the Nice Pants on the Instagram streets. I feel like your tagline is like my favorite.
Really?
It's my favorite.
Everybody's always laughing like, there's sugar! This is the call out at Madiba's Radio, where we connect, inform, and definitely engage. See you guys next week. We love you. Peace out.
You're listening to Madiba's Radio, opening up the waves for you to be heard.